Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Wilson, you sent the game-winning email at the buzzer, avoiding a 4:55 meeting on everyone's calendar. How did you do it?
I got a huge assist from Grammarly, an AI writing partner that helped me make my point.
96% of Grammarly users say that it helps them craft more impactful writing. Would you agree?
Grammarly helped adjust my tone to navigate tough work conversations. And it works everywhere I write, so I can quickly communicate effectively.
Your teammate used Grammarly to summarize an important document, making a three-pointer. How did he do it?
It only took one click. When everyone uses Grammarly, everything just makes sense.
You made an incredible slam dunk to end the game. The meeting was canceled, and your team will go home champions. Go to grammarly.com/podcast to download it for free. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Yo! Welcome into the House of L podcast. I am Lawrence Holmes. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I guess I should reiterate for people who are just now joining House of L. We love to talk with people and hear their stories about. The whole point of House of L is talking with creatives about how they got to where they are and where they're going next. So inside the podcast, we do a lot of stuff. Like we do the Sports Adjacent podcast with the guy who's on this episode and Jason Leisure and Anthony Gill. We do a baseball podcast and there's baseball season. I'm doing some more basketball stuff and kind of potpourri, like all of this stuff. We love to talk with people and hear their stories. And media people in Chicago, and I know there are a lot of you that don't listen that aren't in Chicago, and I appreciate it. But media people in Chicago carry a big weight. I don't know why it is that the media people here are celebrities, but apparently they're celebrities. So hearing their stories, and I like for people to tell me about the hard stuff. When they thought that they weren't going to make it, and what are the things that help push them through? Because I feel that those are lessons that can cross over from one type of job to another. You can listen to the lessons of Mark Grody and know that they don't just apply to people that are working in radio and television. That there's a struggle for a lot of people when it comes to substance abuse that they have to work through. You know what I mean? You can listen to Afia Owusu talking about imposter syndrome in our episode and know that that's something that isn't just the business of broadcasting. So I'm glad that we have this forum, and I'm glad that you're listening to this particular episode because this is great. This is a celebratory episode here. I had always planned on having Russ Dorsey on House of L, where it was just me and him, and we could just talk about the industry, mainly because I think he's really sharp. And we have... If I could tap my own phone, this episode of House of L will sound very much like what a conversation between Russ and I on the phone sounds like. I don't talk on the phone to many people. I always pick up the phone for Russ. I'm just, you know, do this for a living. I talk to people on the phone basically for a living. So I don't usually talk a ton to folks on the phone. I'm more of a text message, email type dude. DM me, like that sort of thing. By the way, if you want to ever email the podcast, House of L Pot in 3, 2, 1, House of L Podcast at gmail.com is how you can email the podcast. But Russ and I talk like this fairly frequently about the industry and where things are going. I always like his perspective because he's a lot younger than I am. And seeing the industry through his eyes often gives me some hope. Because the business can make you skeptical, sometimes leaning into cynical. But having a chance to get to know Russ a little bit over the last few years and seeing his approach to this business is awesome. And now he put out there that he was leaving the Sun-Times. It was a huge deal that he was the beat reporter for the Cubs at the age that he got promoted to it. And now he's being given an opportunity to work a multimedia platform with Bally's and Stadium Network. And I couldn't be happier. And one of the cool things about Stadium is that you get to do national stuff in your hometown. For a long time, you had to make a choice. If you were someone that was from the Midwest and specifically from Chicago, you had to choose, like, am I going to follow my dreams out west to LA or am I going to go to New York? And having more places here that will give people more of an opportunity where it's not completely foreign to them to move to someplace like Chicago if they're from St. Louis or Milwaukee or Indianapolis. It's great. It's great that they continue to do that and put out quality stuff. And it's all the people over there, like, they know how I feel about them. I really respect the job that's been done by a lot of folks over there. And I loved my time there too. When I worked there for 3 years as it was getting off the ground, which makes it even cooler to see where it is now. But Russ he's a wunderkind. Everyone's seen it. Everyone in our business is like, yeah, I wish I could be that young and that talented. And now he gets an opportunity. So we talked about his journey to get there. Like, well, what are the lessons that he learned? He's only 27. How did he get here? And how does he end up valuing it? I think this is a great episode for everyone. And especially for, if you're someone who's got kids, this is the type of episode that I would like for you to let them hear. If you've got high school kids, college age kids that are trying to figure out their place in the world, there's something to learn from Russ Dorsey and his journey. If you're someone who loves the Cubs, if you want to know how we think about some of the things on how coverage is supposed to go, I think you'll get a kick out of it too. My conversation with Russ Dorsey about his new gig at his new place and how he got here at this point on House of L.
3 years ago, when you started doing pods, I wasn't even in the business yet. And I was like, dude, one day I'm going to be on this podcast. Is that not crazy?
It's super crazy. Like, where?
I used to drive. And this might have been when I first broke in end of 18. I'd be driving from my parents' house in Park Forest to Tribune Tower to work on the weekends.
Goodness right? gracious.
The things you do to trying to break into the business, right?
No doubt.
And I was working a 9-to-5 after college, working at a nonprofit, getting low-income high school students scholarships for school, right? I do that Monday through Friday. And then Friday nights and Saturday nights, I'd work at the Tribune doing agate work, right? And I would drive in and I'd be on the Dan Ryan driving past the G rate. And I'm like, man, I'm going to work in that building every day at some point. And I didn't know I'd be working on the other side of town, but just like in general, like I'm going to be in a ballpark working. It just hasn't happened yet.
That takes a lot of dedication, man. And it's a very good example of like goal setting. By the way, my grandfather's house was in Park Forest.
Good place to live, man. Well, good upbringing in Park Forest.
Man, we used to go there. I used to love it because my grandfather had a horseshoe pitch in the back. And he was really good at horseshoes, so we would go and throw horseshoes. And, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really have any sense of how far it is you are away from home. And even though we were only coming from Roseland, it felt like the end of the earth, man. Like, it felt right. Like it was so far away when we go to Park Forest. And I used to remember we would always go down Cicero because they had, it wasn't Baker Square. What was the name of it? It was called Poppin' Fresh back then.
Yep. The Poppin' Fresh, yeah.
And there used to be a Hostess outlet store just south of 30 on Cicero. And we used to go there all the time. So I have so many fond memories of like going to my grandfather's house in Park Forest and hanging out there. It's a very interesting place. Like the way that the houses are set up, and also it's a very like of the south suburbs, of the southeast suburbs, of the suburbs that are east of I-80, I find it to be one of the more interesting of the group.
It was like one of the first real towns like that in the country. That was always this claim to fame. And so it had this big center, big square where Marshall Fields was for a long time. And then the idea was when guys came back from World War II, they had a place like Park Forest. You can come and live, have jobs, have your little mall area. And then obviously Marshall Fields left and it kind of died, that idea. But still great place to live.
Yeah, I mean, that was my grandfather coming back from World War II and setting up shop in Park Forest. So, yeah, you hit it right on the head. Man, when I think about like where House of L was 3 years ago, where we were just getting off the ground, and I wasn't even sure, honestly. Like, I knew I wanted to do it. Like, I knew that I wanted to do a podcast for a really long time. But I couldn't figure out what it was. And so Goff and Zampillo were actually the people that focused me on what it was going to be, like how I was going to do it. And now I think about it, man, the people that have been on this podcast, when you come out the gate with your first three episodes are Jason Benetti, Cheryl Scott, Jason Goff. You know, like that's a pretty good way to start things off. And now I love it because I hear so many great stories about people's lives and careers. And yours is one that I think is very, it's important for young people, and I'm including you in that group because you're so young. It's important for young people in our business because we tell them the horror stories. And I know I tell them the horror stories because I want them prepared. Like I want them to understand how hard it's going to be, how little money you're going to make, how rare opportunities are, but you can still persevere. So it's great to have you on the podcast because look at what you've accomplished in a very small amount of time. And it's a in big portion because of your drive, your talent, and you want it real bad. So I want to start with, where does that come from? Like that drive, where did you figure out that you had that from?
I think a big part of it comes from being an athlete, right? I was an athlete my entire life, and you get to a space where, all right, I want to win. Like I'm super competitive and I've been that way my whole life. And when I stopped playing sports, I think I tore my Achilles my freshman year in college. Playing basketball, first week I was on campus.
Wow.
And I wasn't going to be able to play baseball anymore. And it was like, I was a business major, didn't want to do that. I was just like, oh, it can just pass the time and I'll try to walk onto the baseball team. And I lost the thing I was competitive at my entire life. So it's like, what fills this void? Like a lot, like you talk about the former Bears, you know, Alex and Lance and those guys who like, they leave the field and it's like what they have to find their thing, or any athlete after they leave their sport. And it was like, what fills this void for me? And it was writing, and I didn't want to get into it. I didn't even like doing it. And a guy that lived on my floor, never forget, his name is David Sauer. He heard me always talking to guys. Guys would always come to my dorm. I had the big TV. I was the guy from Chicago talking all loud. Your team sucks, and this is why. This guy can't shoot free throws. This guy couldn't throw a baseball from me to you. Like, and he came into my room one night, and he was like, dude, you should write for the school paper. And I said, that's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life.
Why did you think it was a bad idea?
I hated writing, Lawrence. Like, my English teachers in high school were like, you're brilliant. And I'm like, I hate this. I like one book in high school. It was Macbeth. I love Macbeth. Really great. Cool, right? Other than that, I was a read the back of the book guy. My entire life, and my parents who are going to listen to this would agree, parent-teacher conferences were always, Russ is brilliant, and he could get straight A's if he wanted to. But sometimes he just doesn't want to. And so that was me. And I wasn't a bad student or anything like that, but didn't love writing. Like, it just wasn't my thing. I, like you, big history guy. And so from first grade to when I graduated from college, I never got anything lower than an A in history. So that was my thing.
Wow.
But yeah, I didn't want to write, and I needed something to do. I needed something to pass the time, and I needed something to fill that void, because I wasn't going to be able to play baseball again. And I said, all right, dude, fine, whatever. And he was like, look, I can teach you how to write. I can't teach people what you have in your head about sports. And I said, fine, I'll do it. And the first day I was officially, quote, on staff was baseball media day at Oral Roberts. And I had never interviewed anybody. I had never written an article before. They were just like, yo, go to media day and talk to people. And I'm like, is this how it works? Because y'all about to get the shittiest story you've ever gotten in life. And I'll never forget it. I was up all night researching, studying guys, what guys had done the previous season, what guys had done two seasons before, how the team had done in the tournament, and was shitting bricks that morning. Because I'm like, this could go so bad. And the first guy I interviewed, a guy by the name of Jose Trevino, who is now the catcher for the Texas Rangers. And I talked to him about it like maybe 2 years ago. He said, I would have never known that you had never done that before. And that was the first interview I've ever done. And after it, I was like, okay, this is cool. But it was always, I knew what to ask guys because I was a baseball player my whole life. I knew that missing a cutoff man would make the head coach upset. I knew what would frustrate a player at the plate. Like, I knew things to look for. And then it even expanded beyond baseball, where living in Chicago, like, we have every sport, right? My dad used to buy both newspapers. I used to read the paper after him. And like, I grew up with the score. And so listening to thoughts and being able to develop my own subconsciously, I didn't know I wanted to do that as an adult, but having that background in it really helped me. So it's like, once you get that taste, that's what drove me. It was like, okay, I'm okay at this. Like, let me see how far the rabbit hole, Morpheus say, let's see how far, you want to see how far the rabbit hole goes?
Right.
And once you get that little taste of it, you're like, okay, I can do this.
What steps did you take to improve on your writing?
I just wrote as much as I could. I covered almost every sport, and I just took it really seriously. I was at every baseball game. I was at every women's basketball game. I was at every men's basketball game. I was covering soccer, and it was just, I needed to get thoughts out, right? I just needed to get words on pages and turn phrases into sentences into paragraphs, and paragraphs into a story. And that was really important to me because I might not have known how to be the best writer at the time, but I knew if I continue to develop the skill, continue to hone the craft of, I just need to get thoughts out, right? And over time, naturally, I'll be able to develop that into my voice, right? Or what eventually becomes your voice. So that was a really important part of the process. It's like, I just needed to write. And they didn't have a baseball writer. So I was instantly their baseball reporter after that first day. They had a guy who used to play, who liked baseball, and guys on the baseball team would tell me things because I'd see them. They'd be like, you know way more than people who used to cover this team. So we're going to talk to you. And the coaches were the same way. And just turning those relationships and what I would learn would be a foundation of how to do this job well and turn that into being able to develop my voice as a writer.
So when's the part when you feel like this isn't just something that I'm doing in college, that it actually could lead me somewhere?
The summer 2016, I interned at the Daily Herald. And I felt I was getting pretty good at it. I was sports editor. They named me sports editor the end of my sophomore year in college. And that was insane to me. I'm like, dude, this is nuts. Is this how it happens? But it was like, this is a lot of pressure. But at the same time, I felt that I could do it. Right? I knowing how newspapers work here in the city, I'm like, okay, I know what stories work. I know what to look for. And then on a micro level in college, it was just like, okay, men's basketball can lead most days. I know I'll be writing baseball. So I kind of made sure, all right, I'll write all baseball and basketball, and then I'll find a freshman that can cover golf. And then we'll do that and develop them and then put them on a bigger beat as they get older. But it was that at that moment where I was like, okay, I got this internship. It's awesome. I can go back home. I'll show people, like, I don't know who this Russ Dorsey character is, but he's good. This maybe 2 months before summertime where I should have been here at home, I applied for like 10 internships. All of them said no, right? 9 of the 10 said no. The one that said yes was the Daily Herald. And so I'm like, all right, sweet. I know the Daily Herald. And my first day as an intern at the Daily Herald was the day Muhammad Ali died. And my editor was just like, yeah, I need you to go track down Al Bernstein, legendary Hall of Fame boxing analyst, used to live in Cicero, local guy. He was like, go track him down. He now works for Showtime Boxing. And I was just like, dog, it's my first day. what are we doing here? But I get on Twitter and I was like, this is going to be awful. I'm going to not achieve something on my first day. So I DM him like, hey, Al, my name is Russell Dorsey. I'm an intern at the Daily Herald. I know you're having a really busy day, but would love to talk to you if you have some time. Send him a DM. Go back to my editor. I'm like, hey, I reached out. I'm going to try to wait and I'll write something while I wait. About an hour later, I get a DM from Al Bernstein. And look, I had no following on Twitter at the time. I had no blue check. So this was really a shot in the dark.
Right.
And he DMs me back and he's like, hey, I've been saying no to interviews all day, but I saw this was your first day as an intern. And I remember how hard it was once you break into a business of any kind. And as a local guy, like, I want to help you out. So call me. And we had a great conversation. That was my first story that I wrote here in town, was the day Muhammad Ali died. And it was at that point, I'm like, oh, I could like kind of breathe. I'm like, okay, I hit a deadline. I was able to reach out to somebody that got back to me, turn that into a story.
You probably did something that your editor didn't think that you could do.
Right. And it changed his perspective and opinion of me coming in on that first day. Like, okay, this guy can go find the story, right? Can go find the person that we really need to make the story pop. And over the weeks, it was like, okay, I had never covered golf before. And they put me on one of the bigger tournaments that year, the International Crown, right? It's like a monster LPGA tournament. It's basically like the Ryder Cup for the LPGA. Women from all over the world coming and competing, different countries. Never covered golf in my life, Lawrence, right? And so they like, Russ, take your ass up to Gurney and cover this event. And so I'm like, dog, I've never covered golf before. Who do I know that knows golf? And as I talk to you about all the time, my dad's a scorehead. I'm a former scorehead, current scorehead, I'm not going to lie. And I had been listening to Barry Rosner for years.
I was wondering when we were going to get to, and then I met Barry Rosner.
That was the first day. I was just like, I know Barry's a big baseball guy. I know he's a big golf guy. I'm going to reach out and see what happens. So I sent him an email. I'm like, Mr. Rosner. And now that I know Barry for as long as I have, like, that's hilarious. Mr. Rosner, my name is Russell Dorsey, and I'm an intern with the Daily Herald this summer. I'm at a golf event. I've never covered golf before. I was hoping that, like, I could just talk to you. He was like, he emails me back like 20 minutes later, like, they're sending you out there by yourself? And I said, yes. He's like, well, that's shitty. Okay, I'll be out there tomorrow. So I go to this golf event. It's like 99 degrees, middle of summer. And I have, you know how we have to be at golf courses. So I have like this dress shirt, tie, slacks in 98 degrees. Because I'm like, look, I need y'all to know I have a reason to be here. Okay. Walk into like the clubhouse area. One of the coolest things I've ever seen. Like, it looked like a sports book. Like, they had the leaderboard.
Yeah.
The golf table up. And then they had all these tables for reporters. I will say the best spread I've ever had as a reporter came that day. Like, food was amazing.
All right. So wait, let's not walk over that. What was amazing about that food?
They had like little prime rib sliders. They had this great chicken salad. Like, they just had an like a spread that they would have had in the clubhouse for the players. They had in there for the media. And it was super cool. And then I sit down, I have my laptop, and I'm like trying to figure out a story to write because I have to file that day by 5 o'clock. And I see this dude in like a bucket hat, t-shirts, and khaki shorts. And he walks up and I'm like, hey, Barry, I'm Russ Dorsey. He was like, hey, how are you? And I'm in my head, I'm like, dog, I got my Sunday's best on. And this dude just rolled up in a t-shirt and shorts. And he sits down and we're talking. He was like, Russ, you have pants on. And I said, well, Barry, human beings are supposed to wear pants. Like, this isn't a shocker. And we clicked and connected right away. Like, we have this similar sense of humor. We talked. He gave me advice on how to cover that event. And, like, we just kept in contact. He knew I told him that day I was a big baseball guy. We talked about baseball that day. Another sidebar, the first question I ever asked about golf at the first golf event I ever covered was on the Golf Channel. Pretty cool. But yeah, that summer was really important in my development where I was like, okay, I can do this. I covered baseball. Like, I was able to ask people questions and people responded like, okay, this kid knows what he's doing. They didn't look at me as some intern. And in another way, like, it was the first time people like, you know, Gordon Whitmire and Jesse Rogers and Tony Yandracki and Sahadev and Pat, like, all these people saw me for the first time 5 years before I became their, you know, colleague. And it was something really important for me where I'm happy I did a really good job, but I tell kids all the time, like, hey, when you're in the room with people like that, like, always do your best because you never know where you're going to be in years from now. Like, if I was just some bag and, you know, people remember everything because I'll never forget when I got the job at the Sun-Times and I was introducing myself to Peter Chase and Jason Carr, who's now the director of media relations for the Cubs. I said, hey guys, I'm Russ Dorsey. I'm going to be taking over for Gordon Whitmire at some time. Just want to introduce myself, say hello. Because I didn't think they remember me. They were like, no, we remember you were an intern the year we won the World Series, right? I was like, yeah. They were like, oh, really happy for you. That's awesome. No, welcome. And it was just like, man, like, I'm glad I was not some bad because it could have been terrible for me. But long story short, that's really where, you know, I was like, okay, I can really do this job. Like, I can come home and be able to write not only about baseball, but about different sports, feel comfortable in my own skin as a reporter. And that was really the foundation of where that all started.
What's it like to have Barry Rosner as your Yoda?
It's crazy. That guy is a nutcase. But I love him to death. He is an excellent human being. He looked out for me when I didn't get jobs, when people weren't letting me write, when I didn't hear from people. And it was just really tough in the business. He was always there. And I was so happy when I was able to call him and tell him, hey, man, they just gave me the Cubs beat for the Sun-Times, or the call I just made to him 2 weeks ago about the job I have now. Like, that relationship is really important to me. And having that mentor that you can just talk to, like, a phone call with him is never short. Like, it's always 2 hours.
Correct. That is a fact.
Right? And so then we'll text, and he's like, let's go drink this weekend. And I'm like, okay. That's always a great time too. But having him as a mentor, a guy who has seen everything in our business, both as a reporter in radio, TV, and I think for me as a baseball guy, a lot of my development came from him, because that summer I was driving my dad's Chrysler Aspen from Park Forest to Arlington Heights every day, right? Talking about how bad you want something. And there'd be some days you get caught in that Arlington Heights traffic by the airport, and I wouldn't get home for 2 hours.
Yeah, these people who think that this Bears thing is going to be easy peasy have never driven up there. And don't,
absolutely not.
And don't understand that it could be problematic. Like, there could – I hope that there's a lot of infrastructure improvement that ends up happening. But, I mean, I know exactly where the Daily Herald building is. Yeah. And the Bears' new stadium wouldn't be very far from it. Good luck. Good luck with all of that.
I had a lot of time in the car, right? And I would call him because I'm like, well, I'm not going nowhere. And we talk for hours while I'd get through traffic about baseball and how to cover a beat. And he would always tell me, oh, the 25th man is important. Now the 26th man is important. Like, everybody wants to talk to the star. Usually they don't have anything important to say. Yeah, on occasion they will, but like, he would always tell me, people lie about themselves, but they tell the truth about everybody else. And it was good to keep in mind, because it's like, when I want to paint a proper picture of somebody, I can't just go one source, it talk to them and be done. Like, you have to get a full picture. And like, I talked to him about reporting, and he would tell me about his years on the beat with Maddox and Andre Dawson and Sean Dunstan. And like, it's crazy the what my coverage experience is like and what his was like. He was damn near on the Cubs. He was telling me a story, and I love it, where one day before a game, he sees Greg Maddux sitting on the floor before a start, right? Hour and a half before a start. And him and Maddux were close. And so he just sits on the floor with Greg Maddux. No recorder, no notebook, no nothing. And they're just talking, and they're talking, and they're talking. It's 30 minutes before first pitch now, right? Pitching coach comes in, and he looks at Maddux, and he's like, so are you pitching today or no? And Maddux looks at Barry and was like, well, I should probably get out there, right? And so Barry goes up to the press box, and Maddux throws a two-hit shutout, complete game.
Because of course Greg Maddux does that.
But it's stories like that where I'm just like, this is insane. But it was so valuable to me, and it built our relationship because it was, I never asked him, hey, can you get me a job at the Daily Herald after my internship? It was, I want to do this job really well, right? That's the only thing I want from you. Tell me how I should do this. I can do this job really well. And he'd give me little nuggets. And we talk and talk and talk. And like, that was now going to be 6 years ago this summer. And like, it's, that relationship is super important to me.
He's so great. I don't do it very often because I don't like to bother him. And he's like, you can bother me. It's totally okay.
Please, but, yeah, I tell him all the time. He's the he's among the willfully unemployed. So please bother him.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll start bothering him more. But I have so many questions and things I just want to run by him where I have to ask stuff like, am I being a bad guy on this, or am I justified in being angry about this? And he's always been good at either telling me, hey, you're being an asshole, or no, you're completely justified by being mad about that. He's one of the most gifted, naturally gifted storytellers I've ever been around. I've been around some good ones. Dan Hampton is an incredible storyteller. Doug Buffone, an incredible storyteller. Terry Bors, maybe the best storyteller ever.
Yeah.
Barry Rosner is right there. Like, he's so good at painting the picture. And I'm not talking about what he does, what he did professionally. Clearly, he was good at it professionally. I mean, you just hang out. Like, he was one of those guys that would keep me from doing my job when I was in the Bears press box.
Absolutely.
I would go sit with Barry for a quarter, and we'd talk about the game, but we'd talk about other stuff. And I just adore him. Like, I anytime that I see him, he's one of those people that when you see them, it brings joy to you. And you're like, I love that guy, and I'm glad that he's here because he understands what the hell is going on around here.
And you find those people that like just don't care anymore.
Yes.
he's like, I don't care about, they can take me away. Take me, please. You're doing me a favor. Like, he's that type of guy. And I met his daughter. He was at the last year he was doing columns at the Daily Herald. I saw him. I'm like, what the hell are you doing here? Let's go get food. And so after the game, we go across the street and we go get beer. And his daughter lived in the area, and she comes over and we meet for the first time. And me and Barry are joking around and making jokes and laughing and giggling like little kids. And she looks at me and she looks at Barry. And she looks at me and she looks at Barry and she's like, why are you guys friends? And I just say, I don't know. I don't know why this young black dude and this old Jewish dude became friends, but we did. And my life has been better for it. Yeah, that's Barry Rosner.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. What was the experience of working at MLB.com like?
Different.
It's how different. So?
Well, I'll say the good part first. They gave me an opportunity, right? When I wasn't really getting an opportunity to write here in town at the Tribune when I was there working on a desk, I just needed a place where I could really take this thing to the next level. And by next level, I mean like lower level next level. Like, I needed somebody to give me a space to write about baseball full time. And they had these positions open. They call them RPs, reporter producers, where you would cover the team in your city. And then when you weren't covering games, you would like produce for web and like post stories, like a part-time editor. I was like, cool. And when they created those jobs, they hit me. They were like, hey, we're starting new positions. We think you'd be great as our Chicago guy. Two teams, we know you want to write, so like you wouldn't have to do the editorial part a whole lot. And I'm like, oh, sweet, bet. Hire me. And that's really where people in Chicago and even nationally found, I don't know who Russ Dorsey is, but he does a decent job.
That's where I became aware of you, was seeing your stuff at MLB.
And so going from that and it gave me, and we'll talk about this a little later, but like the experience I needed to do the job that I have now, where I was covering the White Sox and I was covering the Cubs, but I was also covering the Brewers and the Twins and the Red Sox when they were in town and the Angels. And it gave me a full scope. And I really understood the beat dynamic from that job, because I was not only around the Cubs beat, the White Sox beat, but I was around the Mets beat and the Phillies beat and the Angels beat. And you find out, all right, who's the person that dominates? Who's the person that asks the really good questions? You learn about TV people, right? And the questions they ask, or you learn about radio people and the questions they ask. Then you find out like, oh, these are two totally different jobs. Like, these people are here to do this. These people are here to get sound and go on their merry way, which, and that's not to knock TV people. I love TV people and I love radio people, but it's just like, it's just a part of learning and understanding the business that they don't necessarily teach you in school. Like, you have to be out and working to really see it in person.
I do think that I just want to stop you just real quick, because I want to talk about that. I do think that it struck me as weird too when I was out covering the Bears and I was seeing, okay, there are a lot of TV people that are asking questions specifically for a bite that they're going to put into a package, and then they're going to run that package at 4, 5, 6, and 10. And it always was weird to me that there wasn't always a covering. There was like this weird stretch of time, because there were people like Brad Palmer, who used to be the big reporter at Channel 7. And Brad was kind of the leader of the beat, so to speak. Like, he got the first question on the Bears beat, like that sort of thing. He'd be chomping on his cigar. And I always thought that Brad Palmer did a great job of, he wasn't just there to get a bite. He was there to understand what was going on, to ask good questions, and to hold people accountable. He saw a lot of power in the camera rolling and asking questions with people on camera and getting their reaction to it. Yes, there is you do have to go in to each day that you're reporting saying, well, these are the big stories. What's going to be my approach to those big stories? And yes, you do have to feed the bear by doing some of that, but you can't forsake that for what if there's another story there and you missed it because you weren't on the line of questioning that other people were, that, or people were opening up doors for you to walk through to ask some of those questions. So learning that type of stuff on a beat is really significant, that you don't have to kind of plug and play, where you don't have to do it the way that you've seen it done. Some of that, yes, you're going to need, but you also need to be in a place that's going to give you the opportunity to say, oh yeah, I know that I can get the story on Roquan Smith because the Bears made him available today, and we're going to talk about the great season that he has. But there was other stuff that was going on too. Why are we not covering that with the same type of zeal? That's kind of what I mean. That it often becomes formulaic, the way that we're supposed to cover things depending on medium. But I've always loved the reporters that have gone beyond what their formula is to try and give you more of what it is that they're getting when they're out there covering these stories.
It was the thing I learned being out there. It's the thing I love about being on the Cubs beat. And you learn how a beat works. Everybody's competing, but you work as a team, because some days you need to understand that this is the story of the day and we don't care how bad this person wants us to get off of this topic. This is the story. So
the Bears beat did a tremendous job of that with the George McCaskey press conference. They worked as a team to, oh, you're going to try and sidestep Dan's question? Well, I'm going to re-ask that question in a different way to get you to try and answer that question because it's a pertinent question.
Absolutely. And you learned that. I learned all of that being a part of different beats and seeing like, you guys do this, do an awful job of this, right? And then being in the Cubs clubhouse and watching Gordon do his thing and watching Sahada do his thing and watching Pat do his thing and seeing Jesse Rogers do his thing and be like, okay, I see what's going on here. Like, I know what the dynamics are. It's not, you know, this person trying to, and Kelly Kroll to Kelly, like Kelly's amazing, but like Kelly as a TV sideline reporter was one of the beat guys. And I mean that in a very respectful way. Like, she was also a part of that. Like, she wasn't, like, you see a lot of time with people in TV, like, they want to, I'll let the beat ask the tough, quote unquote, tough questions, and I'll just ask my happy questions about the game, get out of here. She didn't do that. And so that getting to see that up close and personal is a really important part for me of just learning how to be on a beat that I didn't know would come a couple years later, but, like, I had that foundation. To really answer your question about MLB.com, though, it's different because it wasn't what I would have 2 years later at the Sun-Times, where you're writing for an independent entity that's not under the umbrella of the league itself.
Now, wait a damn minute, Russ. I used to read your stories on MLB.com, and I swear at the bottom of it, it says Russ can write what he wants. He's independent. You mean to tell me that...
You trying to get me in trouble.
You mean to tell me that was not true? Come on. I saw it. It was right there on the screen in blue ink.
You know me, Lawrence. I used to, there was a period there at MLB.com where I would get a text message or email every week like, yo, you can't say this. And I'm not some just out here tweeting crazy nonsense. I'm just honest. I'm an honest reporter. I'm fair. I always give you facts. I was just saying things that I believed were honest. And it would be like, hey, you can't say this, or you need to rephrase this, or you can't say this like that on Twitter, or you can't say that on Twitter. I made a joke about blackout restrictions one night with Dan Hayes, love Dan Hayes, who, and it was funny, and it wasn't wrong. It was Aloy, when he first was, I think it was Aloy got first called up, they were like, Dan Hayes was like, Aloy Jimenez facing off against, it was, I think, Alex Colomé at the time for the Twins, facing off in the ninth inning right now. You should turn over and watch. And I just replied or quote tweeted and was like, stares at blackout restriction screen. Right? It's like a joke.
But accurate. Joke. But completely night, accurate.
I tell you, when I say 10 minutes later, I get an email like, take this down right now. There are people at the commissioner's office that were not pleased by this. I'm like, all right, fam, come on. So working at MLB.com, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, well, let's not phrase it like this because this might be too harsh. Words I actually heard before. I don't want to shit on MLB.com because, once again, yes, there are a lot of issues over there, as we're seeing right now with the lockout. The leagues have having a lot of issues. But I really care about a lot of people that work there.
For sure.
They were very happy for me when I got that opportunity to have a beat of my own. And it probably would have happened there had something opened up earlier, because they believed in me a great deal. But yeah, it's definitely different than writing at an independent entity.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How did you get comfortable asking hard questions and finding your space in press conferences?
It takes a little bit. Like it, especially when you're getting on a beat for the first time, it's just like, where do I fit in here?
It's like playing double dutch.
Right. It's just like, do I jump in? Well, I'll answer it two ways. First, when it comes to asking questions in a pre or post game, you have to find where you fit in. And that takes some trial and error. It's like, okay, I can ask this question. And once people feel comfortable with you, they're willing to share more. It's a lot easier to jump in, right? Because sometimes when people don't know you, they may answer a question short. They might answer it where they're not really trying to hear what you got to say. I think the cool thing about being a part of a beat here in Chicago, where I could just learn, right? Like I could be a sponge as an intern, right? And I retained all that. And then I could be a sponge when I was at MLB.com and I could retain all that. And I was jumping out and asking quote unquote tough questions as an intern. I remember my first day at Wrigley, I asked Joe Maddon something, the first question. And usually back then it was Bruce Miles that got to ask the first question, but I was Bruce's intern. So Bruce was like, ask it. And I know everybody in there was like, who the fuck is this kid? But Joe respected that, gave me this really thorough answer. And then I'll never forget Sully, as we were walking out, was like, it's a really good question. But it was, I just wanted, at first it was like, I and young reporters go through this, I want to show people how smart I am. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to show people why I'm in here. But what you don't realize, because you're focused on the wrong thing as a young reporter, it's like, oh, I want people to know I'm smart. I want people to respect my questions. It's, you're in the room for a reason, right? People already know that you're good at this job because you're in here. They don't let everybody in here. Sometimes it feels like they do, but they don't. And so knowing that, and it took me a little bit, but it's like, okay, I know baseball. I know how to ask a question. I know I can, you know, present a thought to a player where it doesn't feel like I'm attacking them, or I can present a thought to a manager and doesn't feel like, hey, you're an idiot because this guy shouldn't be in the lineup. Like, because of who I am, and as, you know, from my development as a reporter and just as development as a dude, like, I know how to do the job where people don't feel offended when I ask something. Even when I have to ask something that is viewed as difficult or tough, because of the way I ask questions, I can do it where it doesn't feel like that. It takes time though. And you know, you earn the respect of people that you talk to, right? You earn the respect of your Theo Epsteins and your Rick Hahns and your Jed Hoyers and your David Rosses and your Anthony Rizzos and your Chris Bryants and your Jason Haywards. But it takes time. And I went into it saying, all right, this won't happen overnight. I'm not going to turn into some 20-year reporting vet overnight.
Sure.
But I have to be good at what I'm good at. Like, I can use my strengths to be good at this job right now. I don't have to have the relationships that everybody else has, but I have skills to be in this room and I belong here. And once I realized that, like, yeah, I do belong here, everything else got a lot easier.
I feel like that you came along on the Cubs beat at a time of really interesting people that are thoughtful in the way that they answer questions. So what was it like to be out there when you are asking questions of Joe Maddon and Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer?
It's, you, I don't take it for granted because I learned in my MLB.com days, like every team isn't constructed like the Cubs were constructed. Like what what they built was pretty significant. And you had a guy at the top in Theo Epstein, who's going to go to the Hall of Fame, but was one of the best communicators I've ever heard still, not only in sports, but in general, and how somebody can command a room, right? And then the juxtaposition of Theo and Jed and how they're different. Both really good communicators, but Jed is different than Theo. Theo's different than Jed, and they both would tell you that they're different from each other, but they found the perfect mesh between the two of them. And then even after Theo left and Jed took over as president of baseball ops, it was, you know, learning the personality. Joe Maddon was the same way. It's learning Joe's personality. With Rossi, it's learning that personality. And then, you know, with players, it's the same way. It's like, all right, this guy is sandpaper on these days, but you can talk to him on these days. And then once you build that relationship, it's like, I know he probably don't want to talk today, but I'm going to go up to him anyway. And he's probably like, oh, I really don't want to talk. What do you have? And then you talk for 30 minutes. A lot of, like you said, unique people over there, and like characters. It's not often you find that many players who are different, but also have things to say. And you're right. It's an interesting time, but I don't take that for granted either, because there are some beats, man, and knowing from that MLB.com 10-year, some teams are just not interesting. Like, they're not. Facts. There's not a ton to write about. And that's good teams with not a ton to write about.
No doubt. That's a thing. A thing.
Yeah, for sure.
When you get the job at the Sun-Times, how did you feel?
There were – if you can hear that my water bottle closed, I apologize.
It's totally
you
fine.
You can hear – it was different because, like, I knew Gordon for a while, and I had known the history of the Sun-Times, and the opportunity was so big. And for so long, I had grinded, and it felt like for the first time ever, people saw my talent. And it felt great, man, because I so many people say no in our business. And for a long time, like, I got no after no after no after no after no. No, we can't use your stuff. No, we don't want your stuff. And it's hard as a young reporter to hear that and still be able to block out the noise of, well, I guess I'm not good. And then you turn to Eeyore, like, woe is me. But it's tough. And there was a point where I was just like, is this the right thing for me? Like, yeah, I think I'm really good at it, but this is not happening. And look, part of it is the competitive side where I'm like, I keep all of those emails of people saying, no, I still have them. Still have them. And it's partly wanting to prove those people wrong, but it was partly like I wanted to prove people right. I wanted to prove the David Kaplans of the world who believed in me. I wanted to prove to the Nick Friedels and the Vinny Goodwills and the Lawrence Holmes and Jay Goffs, like people like that who were just like, nah, this dude is really good at this. I'll never forget, I was having lunch with Nick Friedel at Ditka's, RIP Ditka's. And it was the day after the Tribune said I couldn't write over there and work for Forbes, where I was writing a lot and was really starting to get work out there. And I told him, I said, Nick, this doesn't feel right. Like, it doesn't feel fair. Like, I don't have an opportunity here. I went, found an opportunity, crushing, and it's like nobody wants me to win. And I'll never forget, he was just like, you're going to be better than everybody one day.
I agree with him.
It felt good, but you almost didn't believe him because it seemed like every door was closing right here, right? And it's like, every door is closing my face. And
I'm not going to compare myself to Jay-Z, but there was a lot of record labels that told Jay-Z no in the beginning, right? Him and Dame Dash would go into label after label after label after label, and people would say no, 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 no. And at some point, you have to be like, all right, I'll do it myself. And so coming up in the business was like, all right, they're going to say no, I'll do it myself. And part of it is preparation. Part of it is you got to find breaks along the way. And I don't, like, I wouldn't use the word luck, or to me, like, luck is where opportunity and preparation meet. So if you want to say that I was lucky using that definition, absolutely I was lucky. But I wanted to make sure that when I got that one chance, because sometimes you only get one, I wanted to be ready. And so for that to crescendo into the Sun-Times job, it was just really a point where I was like, all that work, all that grinding, all that struggle of coming up in this business, like, paid off.
There's a line by Rhymefest that there's a song that he did with Jazzy Jeff called Practice, and they, you know, sample the Allen Iverson. And the line is, I've heard it's better to be lucky than good. Well, in my case, I guess I'm lucky I'm good. You know, and that's kind of how I feel about you. Like, you're good. Like, that's what ends up putting you in a position to do that. And it's hard because you are usually, when you're young and you start out in this business, you're surrounded by people who you've read or watched or listened to. And it can be a little bit intimidating to think, oh, am I at that place now where there's going to be someone that's saying the same thing about Russ Dorsey? And the truth is, yeah, like, you are at that place because people are going to be consuming your work. And it's hard to get through some of that. I know people who you would think are some of the most successful folks in our industry that still deal with, am I good enough? You know, am I worthy of getting these opportunities? And you're like, yes, you have a track record. Look at your track record. And it's weird, Russ, because sometimes there's a lot of false humility that goes on in our business. But the humility aspect of it is you don't want to come off as someone who feels entitled. You don't want to do that. Like, you want to make sure that you're still hustling and putting in the work and all of these things. But at some point, your talent has to be celebrated. And that's why I always get hype when people win. Like, when you told me about this new opportunity, which we'll get to in a minute, I'm hyped because you won. And it feels like those are the only spaces where you get to brag on yourself a little bit. And it's hard to get to them because they're so few and far between, which is why, to me, like, the celebration should be huge. You know, like it should be a huge thing of seeing your friends or colleagues, like, move about in a way, and you know that they want it and that they're doing everything that they can to get that next level. It's always, there's a lot of joy that comes from that. And that's something that I didn't figure out until much later, where if you know the struggle of your friends and colleagues, and then you see them win, like, that's when the tears happen, you know, like, those tears of joy happen because you want it for them. And you understand, like, what it means to them. In some cases, it's more money. In some cases, it's a better opportunity. In some cases, it's just the validation of, I've been doing this the right way, and I'm going to make the most out of this opportunity. So it's weird. It's something that I think that in the business we don't do. We try, but I don't think we do enough. Like, we need to do more. And once we get out of, like, COVID, then there can be a lot more, right, like, grandiose celebrations, especially with some of the clowns that you have working with you now. Before we get to stadium.
Oh, can I say one thing real quick?
Yes.
It's to touch on your point. It's the thing that you and I have talked about for the last year, where I would call you and I'm like, hey, man, this is happening. Or, hey, man, this person called me.
and we both love the movie Juice, and you'd be like, hey man, I'm a local DJ, right? It's You're not truth. A local DJ. But it's, look, they gave me the Suntimes beat. I was 24 years old, or I had just turned 25 years old. Like, I was the youngest baseball writer in the city of Chicago, and I just had been given a beat to one of the most popular teams in all of sports for one of the largest publications in the country. It was awesome, but it was scary because it's now, all right, I have to keep putting up numbers. I have to keep putting up numbers. I have to keep people reading. I have to break stories. I have to, and the pressure of that, like, initially, like, it wore off in a short time, but it was just like, man, I have to, like, am I built for this? Right? I've been wanting this platform for years, and it feels like it's taken me a long time to get here. Now that I have it, it's like, this is crazy. Like, should I have this? And the idea of imposter syndrome. And I never wanted it to come off like, oh, they're just giving us stuff now. Like, I worked really hard for all of this, but at the same time, it's like, man, like, am I supposed to have this? And then that wears off and you're like, damn right, I'm supposed to have this.
That's right.
but no, you're like, we've had this conversation within the last couple months about that. And no, it does take time to get through that. And especially for me, like, I'm just turned 27. Like, there's people will look at it and be like, yo, you had a lot of success in a short amount of time. I look at it in perspective as everything. Like, it felt like it took 20 years to get to this point. But yeah, it's never losing that drive that we talked about a couple minutes ago. Like, I work as hard now as I did when I was working on the desk of the Tribune trying to break into this business. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to get it and be like, oh, now I'll turn it on. Because if it was that way, I wouldn't be here. Right? People can spot that. Like, people can see, was like, are you really working hard? So it's always making sure, like, no matter what I did, whether it was when I was trying to break in and I was covering softball, that was covering the Chicago Bandits.
Go, right? Bandits. Daily Herald.
They were like, yo, cover the Bandits. And then my old editor, who was there when I was an intern, was giving me work after school and was like, hey, you want to cover high school football on Friday nights? Hell yeah. And I was driving from my parents' house in Park Forest, driving up to
Cary Grove, and
yeah, it was Lake Forest and Barrington and all these different places to cover high school football, because, like, I want it really bad. Right? I tell my dad all the time, like, I'm the reason your car stopped working, because I was putting so many miles on it. You know, doing Daily Herald stuff, and then after that, doing high school football and covering stuff on Friday nights. But yeah, it takes a while to get out of that. I don't belong here. I shouldn't have this. But you realize, like, the work that you put in, and you realize that, like, the people that believed in you, it's like, okay, yeah, I should be here. I do belong here in this position.
I've never asked you this question, and considering that the Sports Adjacent podcast is on House of L, I probably should have at some point. How did you and Jason meet?
It's a good question. So we met on the set of Sports Talk Live.
Okay.
NBC Sports Chicago. And he had known you for a while, and we just got talking one day, and he seemed like a cool dude. And, we shared information, and we just kind of just kept talking. And you were the mutual friend. And it was just like, hey, you seem cool. And if Lawrence likes you, that's enough, more than enough for me. And he was different than my other friends.
He's very different.
He was different from my other friends because he wasn't really old, but he wasn't really young. And I always brag on him after that. Like, I put 100 on 10 with that because he's not that old. But he was old beyond his years in how he viewed life. And I really liked him. His sense of humor is amazing. And it's a different sense of humor than other friends of mine have. Like, he was very dry, but it would make me laugh so hard because I understood every joke that he said. And he's just a great dude. Love him to death. His family's awesome. His wife Ashley's awesome. And we just, you know, related on a lot of different things. Had similar upbringings in the business. And nah, man, it's like just really connected. And it's one of those times in life where you're just like, yo, that's my dude. And then just built a friendship from there. But that's how we met. Like, it was super organic. Like, we were just doing Sports Talk Live together one day. And he was like, yo, cool dude. And we just started talking, and it grew from there.
What I like about Jason is he takes his friendships very seriously. Like, if he calls you his friend, he means that. And I think that for men in particular, it's harder. I know specifically for me, it's been harder to build friendships as an adult. Like, that's a hard thing, because you don't want to, for me, it's, I don't want to infringe on people's time. I know how I feel about my time, like all of that stuff. And he's broken through that. Like, I, you know, like, he'd be like, hey, I'm just going to come over to your house.
Like, yeah,
all right, great. And he would just come over. And even during COVID, he'd bring his little chair. He'd sit out on the sidewalk, and we'd just talk during the beginning of the pandemic. I really like that he cares about that stuff. He's not words. Like, it's legitimate. When he's asking you, like, how are you doing? He legitimately wants to know how you're doing. And it's okay if you tell him, I'm not doing great today. And he can help you, like, walk through some of that stuff. I love the combination of you two guys, because you get him. And he's not easy to get.
Right.
But once you get him, it's like, this dude's a genius. Like, and he bristled, like, when we were talking, we did the Marvel stuff, and I was like, you're Doctor Strange. Like, it's like, that's the easiest one. It's so easy for all of us. Like, we all know this is who you are. And he was kind of like, really? Like, yes, very much so. But you guys are a good combination. It's a good balance of, clearly you both respect each other, but I also think that in your almost of a year of a partnership, you guys have learned when to push forward, when to fall back. And that's great. Like, that's the telltale sign of a good show, when the hosts get to that point.
I trust him. And that goes beyond our show. Like, I'm very, and like you talked about, like, with men being friends, it's actually really, like, you should do a podcast on that one day. Like,
I'll write it down.
Dude friendships. And like, how do you trust people? And I trusted him very quickly. And I'm not really like that. I'm a friendly person by nature, but it's like, to my inner circle is really tight. And I'm really respectful of that, because that's really important to me. And it's really important to him. Like you talked about, like, he really values that. And I could trust him with anything. Like, I could talk to him about anything. And we'd have conversations like that where we would just talk forever. We'd go and grab food, and we'd be there for an hour and a half, 2 hours. A lot like my relationship with Barry is, and in a lot of ways, different dynamic, but like similar dynamic. And it's really special to me. And it is something that, you know, I don't take for granted, like, having him as a friend, as a brother, and somebody like who's my partner in a business now.
Yeah.
In Sports Adjacent LLC. Like, I need to trust my business partner. And I'm glad we were really good friends before this. And I told him, I'm like, hey, man, like, if you don't want to do this, it's cool. Cause like, I know how, like, friendships and money, I said, you know what type of dude I am, but I just want to let you know before we do this. He was like, dude, no, like, it's going to be fine. And I'm like, I agree. I just wanted to put it out there. So yeah, like, that's my guy.
And then inside that dynamic, you already know what I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, I do.
You add the tornado that is Anthony Gill. Why did you guys do that?
I don't know. No, I'm just playing. I do know. Just how I talked about, I trust Jason. Jason and I both trust Tony. Now, sometimes that comes with its conversations like, hey, man, let's dial it back. But we know Tony cares. Tony's a great friend.
He really is.
And I love Tony, and I love the growth of Tony. And people know I give Tony a hard time. It's not because I don't love him and he's not my friend. Like, I'm tough on Tony because, one, it makes for good content, which he thinks is, you know, above everything. But also, like, look at the dude he's become in the last year.
It's really incredible.
Like, he's become, just a great man in general. Like, that's Tony Gill. And then you add the significance of his relationship now and, like, who he wants to be. Like, the stuff we do on the podcast with Tony is amazing, and we're putting on a lot of times because it's, you know, it's funny and it's good content, but like that dynamic that we all have, like that's our real friendship. Like, we went to dinner literally last weekend and we were there for 2 hours and it was Tony, shut up. And it was like that for 2 hours and us laughing and giggling like kids, like that's really us. And we thought he brought a different dynamic. Like, it's different from the dynamic that Jason and I have. And when we're all in the same place, like, it's triangle offense is kind of how I look at it, right? Like, what I do is different from what Jason does. What Jason does is different from what Tony does. And what we all do together is different as a collective, but it meshes and we work and, you know, and we win that way. And so that's why we wanted Tony on the podcast. And like, Tony's one of my favorite people.
Yep.
Like, Tony will text me something and I'm like, Tony, why did you send this to me? Or like our inside joke that we have, the four of us, that he'll just poke me about, but it's hilarious.
I do like that you have now figured that whole thing out. And
yeah, we're done.
Yeah,
we're
done. I figured, because there was some shenanigans, and you're like, you know what?
I'm out.
It's not for me.
No, and not, absolutely not.
And sometimes you learn. Sometimes you go, oh, I really want that. And then you go, it's not for me.
Nope. And that's okay.
And that's totally okay. And maybe one day it will be for you, but it's definitely not now.
No. Yeah, I don't think that situation will turn in my favor at any point.
No, I think that you're doing much better the way that you are. So, look, it took a long time to get here, and I know it doesn't seem like it because you're so young, but this thing, when I saw the Murderer's Row that you have with you on Stadium, I'm like, yo, this is going to be a thing. I see you in a photo shoot with Shams, who's still younger than you, right? Like, Shams is still younger than you, I think.
No, so I'm the oldest person on the I'm the youngest person on the show.
Okay.
But we're the same age.
Okay. So you got Shams on there. You got my guy Noyce, Brad Evans, who's just, I mean, now that you spend some time with Brad, you know.
He's the best.
Like, the guy is legit. Like, he's just, I'll tell you a quick story about him. And I mean, this is something that we could do on a phone call, but since we're here, I'm sitting there at the Super Bowl a couple years ago before COVID, which is, it's interesting. Like, that whole stretch of time, I think back to that a lot. You were part of that. It was going to the Super Bowl. And then I think I actually got COVID before we knew what COVID was.
Yeah.
Then coming back for the All-Star game in Chicago, which was amazing, then going to spring training, then the week later, we were on Sports Talk Live together before the whole world shut down.
Right.
Brad Evans was sitting, I didn't know that he was going to be at the Super Bowl. And it had been a while since I had covered a Super Bowl. I was filling in for JJ because his wife had just had his two beautiful little boys, and he was on paternity leave. So, you know, a bunch of people there at NBC, Like, they knew I had, like, a name in the game, but it's like, what's this old dude doing here? Like, I kind of felt that vibe. I felt that, like, why is Lawrence on this trip? And then they found out when I showed up on Radio Row why I was on the trip. Because people was like, hey, you're here, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come and sit down and talk with you. Seeing Brad Evans there, he was like two tables away from me. It gave me so much comfort. Because he, like, because he's that all the time. And he came, like, running towards me in his fedora and his T-shirt. And he's like, what's up, brother? And we start just wiling out there at Radio Row. He was telling me the latest thing that he was on. The guy's so smart and so prepared all the time. He's got incredible energy that's not bullshit. It's actual. That's who he is. He's running 100 miles an hour, like, all the time. You guys are going to have so much fun together. But for the people who don't know, what's the show, where is it at, and how can people consume it?
Yeah, so the show launches, I don't know when you're dropping this, but Monday the 24th is the show's launching. It's great. It's myself, and Brad has a show launching that day too. It's myself. It's Sham Sharania, who's the OG NBA reporter, even though he's 27 years old. It's like everything amazing. NBA. Like, being around Shams the last couple of weeks and seeing how his days are, he's a machine.
Yes, he is.
And I'm really excited for the show because people are going to see a fun side of Shams that they don't get to see. They just see sources tell me Shams. That's a cool-ass dude, and I'm really excited for people to see that. My guy Joshua Perry from Big Ten Network is also going to be on the show. Awesome dude. Football knowledge out of this world. Played in the NFL for 2 years with the Chargers. Brooke Fletcher, who's coming from Bally Sports Detroit, who, you know, her dad played for the White Sox. She was on the 1983 White Sox, Scott Fletcher. My dad was actually, like, really cool, like, to find that out. I'm like, yeah. So it's the four of us. It's a different show. It's a unique show. It's, you know, Shams is our NBA guy. I'm the MLB guy. Joshua's the NFL guy. Brooke is all of those because she's covered all of those. And we each have our expertise. And, like, it's a show with four people under the age of 30.
Incredible.
That you don't get to see. And so I'll be doing that. And it's going to be on Bally Sports. Hopefully another station here in town so people in Chicago can actually see where we record the show. A couple of weeks are going to be on Stadium and some more channels as the weeks go on. I'll make sure everybody has all those. And then I'll be the national MLB guy for Stadium and Bally Sports. So really cool things have happened over the last couple of weeks.
What does it mean to you to get that level of validation where – you go from being an intern working on the desk to covering golf, to covering preps football, to getting a chance to cover a beat. And now at this point in your life and career, for someone to say, we want Russ to be our voice on national baseball. What does that mean to you?
Everything. And, I was at my parents' house maybe a week and a half ago, and I told them what had happened. And, you know, I came over a couple of days later, and I'm in my old room, and on my wall in my parents' house, there's a piece of paper above my bed from 2019, and it had 7-8 goals on it for that year, and really humble goals. Like, I wanted 1,000 followers on Twitter, and I wanted to be verified, and, you know, I wanted to break a story. The one I really like, because it's like 100% me, is like, I want to meet 20 new people this year, and you know, and then a couple more. And I remember the year prior I made a list of goals, and I didn't accomplish any of them, and it felt like I was failing, because after I graduated from school, I didn't have a job. I didn't have people knocking down my door to have me write. Didn't have a ton of opportunities and just had to claw and grind and claw and grind to find my lane and what my lane was. And going from, you know, writing for, you know, Baseball Prospectus as a 19, 20 year old, because I just knew I just needed to get thoughts on a page and they were going to pay me $20 a month to do it. Like, that was everything to me, because like people, it was the first place people were like, yeah, he knows about baseball. And then going from that to working at Forbes, where I really got to cover stories. And, you know, I had a story that an editor said wasn't good enough and couldn't, you know, go in their publication. And then the day I dropped it, shout out to my guy, Spice Adams, you know, before anybody was talking about Spice Adams, before anybody knew about Spice Adams like that and what he was doing in social media, some snotty-nosed punk who was 22 named Russ Dorsey wrote about it, and it got 100,000 views, right? And like people read it, and it was not to say like, oh yeah, I showed that guy, but it was like, I can really do this. And go from that to, you know, working at MLB.com, where I really got to break into baseball and really got to show people that, you know, I had a voice in baseball and I could have a voice in baseball, or a larger voice. And then to go from that to the Sun-Times, where I'm one of a handful of Black baseball writers in the country. And you and I talk about that all the time. Like, that means everything to me. And the reason I even, and I'm surprised we haven't talked about this already. Like, the reason I even write about baseball is because, you know, I love the NBA, I love the NFL, but like, I looked at the people and the faces that covered baseball and was like, nobody looks like me. And if I know this sport better than any other, I play this sport longer than any other, why not? Like, why shouldn't I have a voice in baseball? And to have this job now and, you know, thinking about all that, like, I started to cry in my parents' house and in my old room. And I'm crying now because it's like, I don't take any of the, no part of the journey for granted, right? And every part of it was important, building my character and my development as a reporter, but as a person, right? It's like, it's really hard to do this job. Not because I think I'm better than anybody else, but it's just like, this job isn't for everybody. And there are times when you feel like you can't, you're not going to be successful in it. And I think about all the people who wanted me to do well. You know, you wanted me to do well. Jason Leisure wanted me to do well. Jason Goff wanted me to do well. Cap wanted me to do well. Gordon Whitmire wanted me to do well. Nick Friedel wanted me to do well. Vinny Goodwill wanted me to do well. Like, all these people, and I'm leaving out a ton of people that, and it's going to make me mad because I didn't say it. Like, the reception that I got that day when I announced what happened a couple of weeks ago, like, it was a relief because I know I did a good job on the Sun-Times beat, but it was also like gratifying to see, you know, the validation of years and years and years and years of hard work, you know, come to fruition, and, you know, people reaching out, like names that I can't say, but like, I was like, wow, like, this person just called me, or this person texted me to say like, yo, you're going to crush this. You're going to be really good at this. You're good at it already. That means everything to me. And I don't want to just make this be like, oh, I've reached the top at 27. I'm done. Like, I'm thrilled because this just gives me more room, more opportunity, more resources to do what I know I can do. And I'm really excited, not only to have the show, because I think the show is going to be awesome, but also, like, I'm so excited. Like, my favorite thing is to tell stories. Like, I'm a storyteller. I've been around storytellers my whole life. Like, I want to be in your list in 40 years of the best storytellers. And I'm gonna be like, you know, Russ was on that list. Barry's on there first, but Russ is on there. Like, I want that. And like, I want people around baseball to be like, man, like, I appreciate Russ's voice in this space. And I'm really excited. And like, I'm happy. Like, the last 8 weeks have been really stressful for a lot of different reasons, and going through a negotiation is crazy. going through two at the same time is crazier. And then I know there was a conversation I had with my agent. Things you're writing down. Another talk about agents and that whole like life. It's super important.
It really is.
I had a conversation with my agent maybe 2 days before I got an offer from Bally and Stadium. And he was just like, what do you want? And we had been talking about financials. Like, I told him what I wanted there, but it was really kind of just like, yo, what do you want like right now? And I told him everything I wanted. Like, I told him, look, obviously financially, I want to be taken care of, but it's like, I want to have a voice nationally. Like, if I'm going to be here and this is the trajectory, cool. But like, I don't want to have to play the game anymore. And I just want a place where I can feel comfortable. I can be me, and who I am and what I am is valued. And I, you know, shout out to my agent, Kevin, because he took that and he found a place for me. And so it means everything, man. Like, this isn't I don't take any of this for granted. I don't want to be fake humble dude either. And you're right. There's a lot of Varnell Hill in this business.
Fam.
Seen a lot of it. When you're trying to get to the yams, you don't want to tell you how to get there. Like, I got big timed along the way. And like, a lot of stories like that, where it's just like, okay, like that's shitty, but like, okay, now I know how people are, and, you know, guarding myself, guarding my heart from stuff and all these different things. Like, I'm happy the journey even started, right? I'm glad I didn't give up halfway through, because we're not even here right now. I'm glad I met you at NBC Sports Chicago, where our first day we met, at the end of it, we're on an elevator, and you looked at me in my eye and you said, we're going to do some stuff. Like, I'm going to figure out how to get your voice out there. And you came through with that. And so I appreciate you and your friendship tremendously, because you are Lawrence Holmes and you don't have to do that. And like, there's so many people who have just been in my corner texting Cap today. And like, people don't really know David Kaplan.
They really like,
they
don't
think they do, but they don't.
100%. You're 100% correct.
And, people like that who are just like, you're really good at this. The first day I was on a set with him for Sports Talk Live, sweating bullets coming in, and then you get that 3-2-1 go, light goes on, and felt like I'd done a good job. And in the break, he was just like, you're amazing at this. Like, I want you to know, like, people aren't good at this. And, you know, people like Barry, who, you know, to have him as a mentor, and to just continue to prove people like that right is really important to me. And I appreciate each and every person who's read my stuff, who's shared my stuff on social, who's DM'd me, who's reached out. And like, I'm a big believer in lift as you climb too. I know you are. And I try to talk to as many, answer as many of those DMs as possible, those emails. Like, it's crazy, because you get to a point where it's like, there's not enough hours in the day. I try to talk to as many classes as I can, because there's another Russ Dorsey out there looking for somebody to believe in them. And I've had so many people believe in me, and who am I to be like, I don't have time anymore. And so just try to continue to be for other people and kids coming up behind me, like people were for me.
I think that's a good place to end things. Congratulations.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I really do.
You're going to do a great job, and you're going to, the more I see that crew that they have assembled around you, the more I'm like, man, he is about to go on a ride.
And I saw Brad at, we had a Bally Sports Stadium meet and greet the other night. And I sent you that picture, and he was like, yo, tell Lawrence Uncle Brad's in town, get his ass over here. We're going to have a fun night. got these two shows launching. So he's like, Monday night, tell Lawrence to break out the coat, get outside, Uncle Brad's in town.
I'm such a fan, of his.
He's the man.
Russ, thank you for this. I'm glad that we got your perspective on House of L, because I think it's really important for younger people to hear that they can succeed, they can win. Like, that's important to hear that from people. And you're paying it back too. Like, you want to show the people that you feel some gratitude towards, that gratitude, and that stuff is appreciated. And the beautiful thing is that all of us who saw it is what's the common line? It doesn't take a whole day to recognize sunshine. Like, we're not geniuses because we saw it. It's pretty easy with you to be like, oh yeah, that guy right there. Yeah. That's a thing. That's going to be a thing right there. So yes, I'm glad that all of the people that have the list of people that you mentioned saw it, but it wasn't that hard to see. And I look forward to a couple years from now, you being back, it just being us on House of L again, and us talking about the next thing that you're doing.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you, your platform, your friendship, and how important this platform was in my development, knowing that, like, look, people had hard roads. Like, listening to Gabe Ramirez talk about his journey, right? Listening to Adam Hogue be like, me and my wife didn't have any money. Money, what? Like, listening to Jason in the beginning, right? Everything that happened. To listen to Jason now, right? And everything that he went through, and the Cheryl Scotts, and all the different people that are in this business who had an origin story. It's really important. And I know there are a lot more people out there than me that feel that, younger kids too. So, like, it's really important, and I appreciate you for a lot of different reasons. And thanks for having me on, man.
You're welcome. Now leave me alone. I gotta pay these sports adjacent guys. I gotta write them a check. I got football. Please. I got football to watch. I got all sorts of stuff. So get the hell out of here, kid. And good luck to you. I'll see ya. I love Russ. I think that he's so talented and he's really, really smart. What he said there, when he's talking about proving people right, our industry, there's a lot of times where you do feel like, I need to do something. Like, I need to, you take some of the bitterness. I'm guilty of this, I know. You take some of the bitterness and you're like, I've got to prove people wrong. Like, I've got to prove the people that didn't believe in me wrong. When the opposite is so much more gratifying. When you're able to look at the people who did believe in you and prove them right. That they were the people that were holding you up at your lowest moments when you thought that you weren't going to get to the next thing, or you thought that this thing that you desperately wanted was the thing for you. And those people were supporting you and saying, you didn't get this opportunity, but guess what? If you keep grinding, something else is going to come along and it's probably going to be better for you. Proving those people right is incredibly gratifying. And so I'm glad that he understands that. But it's not surprising. Like, he's a prodigy. Like, I don't even know if Russ understands how much of a prodigy he is. It's not supposed to be like this for someone who's this young, but it shows you the level of talent and commitment that he has put into what it is that he's doing. And I can tell you, having worked at Stadium Network, I have lifelong friendships from my time at Stadium Network. Michael Kim is one of my most trusted colleagues and friends. Laura Britt, who I worked with, is one of my most trusted colleagues and friends. Tyler Foljam, Dave Ross, like, that whole family, like, I got there right as it was starting up. It's a wonderful environment. And Russ is going to grow and he's going to be surrounded by really fun, creative people that are going to take good care of him. And I can't wait to see what he does next. I'm also glad that he is like, hey, we're going to do this episode. I've been on vacation and stuff. But I'm glad that we got a chance to do his episode and we could put it out immediately so you can share in the success of one Russell Dorsey. It's a good thing, and a lot of good lessons inside of there, including the one he said about Cap. If you don't believe him, go listen to the episode I did with Cap about 8 weeks ago. Just go back and listen. What you think Cap is not what he is. I'm telling you. I appreciate your support. I know that I'm putting out a ton of content right now, and it can be hard to keep up with, but I appreciate that you give me the room to do what I need to do. I will talk to you next time. Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.